back again next week. See you then.
Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Portland City Council today held a public hearing on proposed ordinance to ban the use of certain pesticides for use on city-owned parks and buildings. If passed, Portland would follow a similar ordinance passed Monday in Ontario, Canada, which aims to reduce the use of these pesticides by 80%. Numerous studies have linked the pesticides in question with the deaths of bees, butterflies, and other pollinators. We bring you now the voices of some of the people who testified at the hearing this afternoon.
This ordinance is especially commendable because it encourages retailers operating within the city of Portland to accurately label plants, seeds, and other products that have been treated with neonicotinoid pesticides and to phase away from their usage. Notably, Portland would join other large cities that have passed strong ordinances to ban neonicotinoid pesticides. To date, the cities of Seattle, Spokane, Olympia, Eugene, even Cannon Beach have banned these products on public property, and there are other cities as well. They are being hailed as bee-friendly cities, and I can see Portland taking its place among them. Germany, France, and Italy have banned neonics outright, and neonics is a short way of saying neonicotinoid pesticides. Scientists specializing in pollinator health at Oregon State University are urging extreme caution and, whenever possible, reducing or ending any use of neonicotinoids. These actions are in alignment with a recent presidential memorandum establishing a federal task force to address the crisis of diminishing pollinator populations, as well as new scientific evidence finding conclusive proof that neonicotinoids are a large part of the problem of bee colony decline. So why is it important for Portland to take this action now? Bees and other pollinators are essential for two-thirds of the food crops humans eat every day. Last year, U.S. beekeepers reported losing 30 to 40% of their hives. And according to a study by the United Nations, of the 100 crops that provide 90% of the world's food, 70 of those 100 are pollinated by bees and require bee pollination or another pollinator. And those just aren't any type of crop. They're fruits and vegetables and nuts that we all put on our table to feed our family and provide the basis of a healthy, diverse diet. So I'm wondering, probably almost everyone in this room, and perhaps you as leaders of the city, grow food or support community gardens or are interested in a local food economy. And that will be dependent upon our pollinators. You might hear also from representatives today from nursery associations or chemical lobby groups that farmers need every tool in the toolbox to battle pests. And that sounds reasonable enough on the face of it, but a government's entity, a government's responsibility, first and foremost, is the protection of public safety and health and the sustainability of future generations. Your concerns are quite different. You don't have to go with the cheapest and the most risky of practices. That's why we see in the true crux of the matter that Portland can join those other cities that have adopted bans, as well as the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that has banned the use of all neonicotinoids on wildlife refuge lands to protect our waterways, our soil, and beneficial insects. And I think about smoking cigarettes. Who would have imagined today, or who would have imagined maybe 15 years ago, the kinds of knowledge we now have about the impacts secondhand smoke has on children? First, we started with battles over whether or not to label cigarette boxes. Then we banned it in federal buildings. Then we banned it in state buildings and then in city buildings. And now, you probably have heard on the radio, Oregon has smoke-free parks.
They do in Portland, too.
Yes. And now we have bans on smoking near buildings because of the knowledge we have about secondhand smoke. And I know that neonicotinoids are going to follow this path. They're systemic. They're long-lived in the environment. They're dangerous. They're risky.
I'm Jean Camp. I'm the owner and operator of Paramount Pest Control. I am the first vice president of the Oregon Pest Control Association. Paramount Pest Control holds many of the city accounts. I am a vendor for your hospitals, your libraries, your fire department, your schools, your DHS offices, your correction facilities, and many other owned city properties. We serve some of the city's most sensitive accounts. I take great pride, and so does the rest of my company, in offering the finest services that we can offer the state. The banning of neonicotinoids is a huge step backwards. There is no scientific data that can solely call out neonicotinoids as the only cause in the collapse, colony collapse of our bees. There's no scientific data showing that the products containing neonicotinoids, when used according to the label, pose no unreasonable risk to humans, environment, including our pollinators. To ban neonicotinoids in the Portland area is a huge mistake. You will be taking away one of the strongest, most effective tools in the use of bedbug work, as well as other pests like ants, fleas, ticks, roaches, and termites.
My name is Micah Meskel, and I'm the conservation assistant at the Audubon Society of Portland. While we strongly support the adoption of this ordinance, we do have some concerns that the attached exhibit potentially leaves the door open to continued use, and we'd like to flag a few sections which we believe could be strengthened. Specifically, we recognize the problem that the rose mitch represents a special challenge in terms of eliminating all use of neonicotinoids in city property, and understand why the city feels compelled to institute a transition program specifically for public rose gardens. We also believe that it is important to recognize that the idealized image of a perfect rose may be one that is dependent upon use of toxic chemicals. We believe the public has become much more understanding and supportive of the concept that the vegetation in healthy and pesticide-free parks may be a bit browner than once considered acceptable. That priority should be placed on human and ecological health, not aesthetics. The advisory committee that was convened by Portland Parks and Rec in transitioning rose gardens away from neonic should be a technical advisory team as opposed to a balanced stakeholder group, as they are specialized and are less experts on the issue. And then we also recommend that the city put a cap of a two-year cap on the pilot project as opposed to 2 to 4 to really set a proactive time frame to really find a solution.
My name is Scott Dahlman. I'm the policy director for a group called Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Nobody wants to see adverse incidents involving pesticides and bees. The incidents we've seen over the last couple of years where pesticides were misused and there were large adverse incidents are terrible situations. They were dealt with accordingly by the Department of Agriculture and fined for the mistakes that they did make. We supported that and think that's appropriate. You need to use these tools appropriately. But we have to recognize that when something is used inappropriately, that is not a reason to ban the entire product. EPA has been petitioned several times to ban neonicotinoids. In response to a petition in 2012, EPA concluded that the EPA is not aware, and this is a direct quote, of any data indicating that honeybee declines or the incidence of colony collapse disorder in the U.S. is correlated with the use of pesticides in general or with the use of neonicotinoids in particular.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of the City Council.
The last time I was in this room was in 2011 when we were proud to create September 17th as Honey Bee Awareness Day.
Oh, and just put your name into the record, sorry.
Taggart Siegel. Yes. I am the creator of Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us? The film looks at the catastrophic disappearance of honeybees around the world and the mysterious world of the beehive. I have interviewed experts, scientists, entomologists, and beekeepers, and there is conclusive evidence that the pesticides that are extremely harmful for pollinators and ultimately to ourselves. And I could say this has also affected me personally. I'm a beekeeper, and I live in Selwood, and my bees just died. They disappeared. They were healthy 3 weeks ago, and they're now gone. And this was a classic case of colony collapse disorder where the bees disappear, and the honey is there. I had two boxes of honey just full of beautiful honey, and the bees disappeared. So this, because bees could fly up to 3 miles, I don't know if it was my neighbor next door or two, you know, a block away or up to 3 miles away. Whatever they were bringing back to our hive at some point was affecting them. And in fact, they might not have made it back to the hive. Man has created a deadly cocktail for bees. And if we don't protect them, we're not protecting ourselves. Colony collapse disorder has reached life-threatening dimensions. 30 to 40% of beehives disappear every year. And when you look at entomologist Mae Barenbaum, she says these neonicotinoids, which are neurotoxic, they target the nervous system, affect the ability of the bees to learn and to remember and to navigate, all of which would contribute to an inability to return to the hive after foraging. I think that's possibly what happened to my bees. And the head of the UN Environmental Program warns that the decline of bees means the writing is on the wall. We have to do something to ensure pollination for future generations. They're absolutely essential in what they give us.
My name is Rich Hatfield. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland. I'm a father of two young children. And I'm also a conservation biologist with the Syracuse Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Neonicotinoids are the most widely used group of insecticides in the world. They've been billed as low-risk, high-efficacy chemicals with low toxicity to non-target organisms. However, evidence is quickly mounting in the form of hundreds of peer-reviewed scientific articles that these chemicals are not low-risk, that the efficacy is quite limited in agricultural settings, and that because of their systemic nature, their longevity, they're having profound effects on beneficial insect communities and the animals and processes that depend on them. In short, these chemicals are contributing to the destruction of functioning ecosystems. While the bulk of attention has been paid to bees, less well understood is the effect that these chemicals are having on our less charismatic, yet equally important invertebrates, earthworms, ground beetles, and predatory insects, which all contribute profoundly to a healthy ecosystem. The fact of the matter is that less toxic, more targeted, and equally, if not more effective, alternatives like water and soap exist. In addition to reading much of the scientific literature surrounding this issue, I've also seen devastating effects that these chemicals can have firsthand. I was the biologist that responded to the bumblebee kill in Wilsonville in 2013. When I was on the scene in that June, dead bumblebees were literally raining out of the trees, their bodies hitting the pavement. The thought that these beautiful animals were dying for cosmetic reasons to prevent cars from getting a sticky residue was maddening. Clean cars are optional. Bees are not optional. As someone that has worked on a bumblebee conservation for the bulk of my adult life, this was a disturbing and revolting experience. I'm also a member of the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature Bumblebee Specialist Group. I've just finished an analysis of the 46 North American bumblebee species, and our results suggest that as many as a quarter of them, or more than a quarter of them, are facing some degree of extinction risk. One of the ODA's conclusion from the bumblebee Wilsonville kill was that our bumblebee populations were healthy because there were so many in that parking lot. There should have been as many as 15 or 16 species of bumblebees on the ground that day, but there was really only one species. The Willamette Valley is home to over 400 species of native bees, and there was really just one species in that parking lot. To me, that does not suggest that we have a healthy community of bumblebees. It suggests that the biodiversity in the Willamette Valley is reduced, and I suspect that neonicotinoids are culpable, at least partially, in that decline.
The testimony you just heard was from today's City Council meeting in Portland. The proposal to ban the use of certain pesticides on city-owned property was not voted on today, and the City Council will bring it back up for a vote in several weeks. This has been the KBOO Evening News in Depth.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Occupy the Farm, playing at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, April 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
What we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
Occupy the Farm tells the inspiring story of 200 farmers who occupy the last piece of farmland in California's urban East Bay, planting 15,000 seedlings to feed the community and disrupt plans to build a shopping mall. That's Occupy the Farm, Thursday, April 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D.